Welcome to the NCO Journal Sergeant's Time Podcast, a new series featuring informal conversations with leaders at all levels, where you'll have the unique chance to learn what makes them tick, what their leadership styles are, and what inspires them. Today we welcome Command Sergeant Major Tammy Everett. Sergeant Major Everett joined the Army in 1996 as an intelligence analyst. During her career, she's held a variety of leadership positions in the intelligence field. She currently serves as Commandant of the NCO Leadership Center of Excellence. It's an honor to have you on the show today, Sergeant Major. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start this off by talking a little bit about your past. We know now you are the Commandant of the of Nickel Co., and we just kind of want to bring it back and talk a little bit about, you know, what life was like growing up, you know, where you grew up and what you did back then.
Yeah, so I grew up in a little small town called Moyock, North Carolina. I'm one of five children, and I'm the only girl. I have four brothers, one older and three younger than me. Academics was really important for me in going up through all levels of education. My family was not super wealthy, so my parents drove into us at a very early age that if you want to go to college, you're going to go on your grades. Mm-hmm. So that made me, you know, try really hard in school. Played softball through high school, and then I went off to college. But obviously, this is where I ended up. Joined the U.S. Army. Life was great. We didn't have a lot, but I grew up in the days where you woke up and ate breakfast, and you spent all day outside playing, and then you came home when it was time to eat dinner. And I did that all around the neighborhood, and most of the time in our backyard with my brothers playing a myriad of things. You know, we used to build forts and climb trees and, you know, all those kind of things.
And now you do it for real.
Now I do it for real.
is the Army something that you knew that you might do when you were a kid?
Absolutely not.
No.
and I don't mean that in a bad way, right? So my oldest brother actually was supposed to join the Army. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing that I really knew about the Army. My grandfather served. He had a lot of issues from Vietnam. So it wasn't really a good portrayal of the Army and life after the Army. So my brother was supposed to join the Army, but a few weeks before high school graduation, he got into a really bad car accident, damaged his shoulder, so he was medically unable to join the Army. Right. I didn't know anything about the Army at all, other than what the recruiter was telling my brother when he came to the house to recruit him, but never on my career path at all or my life plan at all.
So you kind of took the helm for your brother there.
I think so.
Kind of took a spot.
Yeah.
How is it that you ended up enlisting in the Army then?
Yeah, so I went off to college out of high school. I went to the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. But I was also at the same time pregnant with our first daughter, Jasmine. My husband and I weren't married yet, but we were about to have a child. So it was very difficult for me to go to school and then take care of this baby that I had while I was going to college and trying to work. My husband had served in the Army 4 years and then moved back home to North Carolina, and that's how I met him. So really funny. One night we were just watching TV, and the commercial came on about joining the Army, and I jokingly said, I think I'm just going to join the Army, you know, because it was really hard for us to, very young, we were super young, and trying to raise this baby. It was very hard financially. And then he says, you know what? It's not really a bad idea. He was like, I did it. I can give you some pointers. And if it's something you really want to do, then you should do it. So the next day, I put Jasmine in the stroller. And I pushed the stroller down to the recruiting station, which is strategically placed next to the university. And I went into the recruiting station, and I said, hey, I need a job. That's what I told them. And at first, I went to the Air Force recruiter. because in my conversations with my husband, he was like, you probably want to join the Air Force. I think it'd be easier for you. So I went there first, and the first thing the Air Force recruiter asked me was, you know, is this your child? Are you married? And I said, nope, this is my child, but no, my boyfriend at the time, which is now my husband, we're not married. And then they said, well, we can't take you. And then the Army recruiter, who was in the same room, said, but we can if you come on over here. And then the rest is history.
It's funny how the world kind of puts you in this weird trajectory.
Yeah.
What did you initially enlist as, Sergeant Major?
So I've been an intel soldier from the very beginning. I came in as a 96 Bravo, which is all source intelligence analyst. But over the time, the MOS changed to 35 Fox.
So that means we can't ask you any questions about that. But let's get down to the nitty gritty, though. So what we would like to know is what are the things that inspire you? What inspires you?
People. It's people inspire me. People that really want to do more. People that are passionate about what they do, and they just like will give you everything that they have to do better for the larger mission. I will tell you, people are the only reason I'm still in the Army. I mean, I love what I do, but it's just the dedication of the people and the teams that I've been, blessed to be a part of that really just keep me going. Like, they inspire me because they make me want to do better. People keep me on my toes too, right? They make sure you're doing all the right things. So I hope to inspire people, but people are my inspiration.
Well, let me follow that up. Yeah. Could you tell us a story about somebody in particular who inspired you? Maybe a little story.
I have tons. I can give you one, as my first introduction to, what it truly means to be a non-commissioned officer. My first duty station out of AIT, HHBN, DeVardy, 1st Cavalry Division. DeVardy's existed before they went away and came back. My Sergeant Noel Million, he took me under his wing, and he just really led by example from start to finish. Some examples, like, I didn't even have a driver's license. So I learned to drive a Humvee before I got a civilian driver's license. He taught me that. I didn't really understand finances. He, kind of taught me, okay, financial planning. This is how, the money that you have, this is how you pay your rent, this is how to make sure you do all the things you're supposed to do. He's the one who taught me about, correspondence courses and the promotion points system. He got me signed up for, showed me how to sign up for correspondence courses and making sure I was doing them. Checked in on me monthly, set, feasible goals for me to reach. He did sergeant's time training with me. We had a very small section in the S2, but he took it very seriously to make sure that we knew all of our, skill level one tasks, but we also were the best intel analysts, to provide the DeVardy commander, who was General Odierno at the time, Colonel Odierno, with the right information on the threat. He was the sole reason why I wanted to be an NCO, because I wanted to be like him. I was so young coming in the Army, and he just, really, like a brother, that you really look up to, and just led me from start to finish, And then when I left DeVardy, I was 1,000% ready to be a non-commissioned officer. And then that was one of the first things I did when I went to my next duty assignment was go to the board, because he prepared me to do it.
Is he who you styled your leadership?
Parts of it. Yeah. It kind of changed over time. He taught me how, to take care of a soldier, what it really means to take care of a soldier, be positively engaged in all aspects of their life, and how things outside of work affect your work, but there's many others that have what they've done for me and how they led me I've taken pieces of those, and it's changed over time, you know, based on things that have happened in my life and folks that I've come in contact with.
Being a leader, what's something that you could tell our junior NCOs, something they could do to kind of give them a little bit more buy-in with their soldiers, you know, to let them know that they care, that they really care?
Yeah, you got to get to know them. You know, you can't be afraid to have a conversation. You can't be afraid to be nosy. You know, ask the questions that kind of break the barrier to really get what's behind what you see. Because once you really understand what motivates a soldier, what drives a soldier, you know, you can get more out of them. You know, their productivity levels will increase, their efficiencies will increase, and they'll work really, really hard for you if you just, you know, take the time to get to know them and really just understand that they're people. Like, we're all people. You know, we're people, we have issues, we have lives, we have concerns, we have stress, internal and external. It's just having someone that really just listens. You know, we don't get bogged down with the day-to-day stuff of, you know, mission, which is 1,000% important. That's what we do. But we can't do that and forget that there's a person behind that mission.
Along those same lines, failure, you know, is it, I know that there's, has there been a time where you failed at something, but what did you do to kind of get past it, to move on and to learn from it?
I've failed a lot. You know, you learn from failure. I think failure is an important part of everybody's journey, you know, but I'll just share another vignette with you, and it's failure. You know, failure at its finest, a leadership failure, but it also very similar to the other vignette that I shared of, like, it was a catalyst, something that changed my leadership style. You know, so I was this time I'm a young sergeant. You know, I'm at my next second duty station, and now I feel really good about myself because I have three chevrons on my chest. The NCO, I'm an NCO. Like, I'm super proud to be an NCO. Like, I feel like I have superpowers, you know, and, you know, it's mission. Now I'm actually in charge of people. And then I kind of went a little too far. I forgot that there's people behind the mission. And I was just like, okay, I'm in charge of a section and we're going. Like, we are results driven section. And then I had, what I didn't know is I was failing miserably on the people side. And the S4 NCOIC Staff Sergeant Morris, you know, she pulled me aside and she said, "Hey, Sergeant, you know, do you know all these things that are happening with your specialists over here?" And I was like, "Nope, I didn't know that." And she was like, "Maybe you need to slow down a little bit because this specialist is here on a compassionate reassignment, and this specialist has all these other things, and you're like pushing him over the edge." And I was new to the organization, and I didn't follow on my own advice that I just gave you for the junior NCOs, but I was failing at leadership. You know, people were working, but they weren't giving me 100% because I didn't take the time, like, to really get to know them. I didn't understand what was going on in their lives. I was just like, we got these things. We got to get them done. I don't care about anything else. You know, let's go. And it took the mentorship of Sergeant Morris, who, you know, pulled me aside and said, "You got it all wrong. You kind of got to bring it back around." So it took me a good year because I wasn't receiving what she was giving me because I was a hard-headed young sergeant. I thought I had all the answers. But then I slowly started to pick up on, okay, we're not doing, yeah, we're getting things done, but we could be doing it better. So it kind of made me do a little bit, come around with a different approach. So, you know, just the overall leadership failure is what I would call it. But a good mentor along the way that, you know, had the courage to pull me aside and lead me in the right direction.
I guess you could always say that youth is wasted on the young, you know, because you're going through, you think you know it all, and then it takes a wake-up call to to realize that you still have a lot to learn.
Yeah. Even now. I mean, even when you're a command sergeant major, you still don't know it all, right? Mm. You got to be humble enough to know that you don't know it all. And then you rely on people on your team to teach you.
Well, I feel like with your answer that you gave, which was phenomenal, and a lot of the leaders that we've talked to recently, they always seem to have that same idea of leadership and how if they ever failed, that it was because of those things, that they didn't offer that dignity or respect to a junior soldier at some point in time. Even when I came in, it seemed like some of those leadership traits were very championed, right? So like, oh, he didn't do this. Oh, we better get him. You know what I mean? Let's go smoke him or whatever. Nobody asked first, like, hey, are you doing all right? You know what I mean? That never happens, I feel like. And I feel like it's a hard bridge to make sometimes as to whether it's a people thing or a results thing.
Yeah, we're very, the Army has changed, you know, for the better. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of debates, you know, if we, you know, have gone too far one way or the other, but we're a performance-oriented culture. You know, we're a results-driven culture. You know, we define our worth and our success and what we accomplish. That doesn't necessarily nest well with how well did you take care of the people under you, right? Mm-hmm. But we've come around to realize that if you don't take care of the people, you know, performance suffers. Results aren't as good as they probably could be. And I think people have always been the bedrock of what we do. I think we're just voicing it now a little bit in a different way. The messaging is a lot different. But you're right. The culture was just different. When I grew up in the Army, like, you never talked to the first sergeant. If you saw the first sergeant, you ran the other way. Like, the only time you talked to the first sergeant was probably if you were in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, the first sergeant was like this godlike figure that you never saw unless you were in trouble, and you never asked to talk to the first line. You had no need to, right? Your first line leader was it for you. You know, and now, you know, as the Nickel Coast Sergeant Major, like, I tell folks, if you got an issue, come talk to me. You know, it's very different. You know, one's not wrong, it's just a different time, you know, just a different underlying culture.
Maybe a different type of question for you, Sergeant Major, because I really want your input. To that fact of leading troops with dignity and respect, is there a way that you think that we can quantify that and put it in an evaluation or some way that we can explain that we did these things?
So, no, there's always the – we always just give the blanket statement on the values part of your eval, you know, fully supports EO – treats everyone with dignity and respect. But I think there's a way. I'd have to go back and, like, look at some of the evals that I've written in the past. But, you know, there's a way on the backside of the eval that you could probably quantify or get across. Or maybe it's in the you know, senior raider comments or the raider, you know, bullets of how you actually take care of people. Quantifying it's going to be really hard, you know, because you can't, when you think quantifiable in terms of evaluation, you're looking for a number or a percentage or something like that. So I think that would be very difficult to do. But I think you could write a really good bullet or a comment, you know, just to talk about your impact on people and how you take care of people and how that, you know, that's what you do, and then what is the effect of what you do? You know, has that increased, you know, morale in the unit? Has that increased the proficiency of your section? You know, what is the effect of you, you know, being a very people-oriented leader and leading with dignity and respect at all times? Like, what is the result of that, you know? So it would really require the raider or senior raider, like, to really understand the impact that the NCO is having on the organization, if that answers your question.
It does.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
It's kind of a curveball a little bit.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
I was like, I wonder if she's going to say this one.
I figured if there's anybody asking, might as well be you.
Yeah, that's a good one. Going back to one of the things that we were talking about before about leading young soldiers like with dignity and respect, I was in the Marines, and I had a staff NCO who was he was hard. He was always, you know, just always on, and he drove me to do my best, and I did what I needed to do. And there was another NCO, staff NCO, who was a gunny. He was one of these people that just kind of would put his arm around me and was like, "Hey, I can do it." It kind of encouraging that he got more out of me by talking to me like a human being, by inspiring me to not fail him through compassion and respect, than the guy who was always knife handing me. So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? Maybe it sounds to me like that's the kind of leadership that you use. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I didn't always, you know, I was a drill sergeant at one time, you know, so I know about the knife hand, and you know, I think there's a time and a place for it, but I think it all boils down to getting to know your soldiers, right? What motivates them? How do they receive information? How do they receive, you know, discipline? Like, my father was a disciplinarian, right? He raised his voice and told us one time. And if we didn't do what he said, like, we knew we were going to get a belt, right? Because that's kind of when we grew up, the way it was back then. So, you know, going through basic training, the drill sergeants only had to tell me something one time. Right, because I grew up in a household where, like, if you didn't, this was what would happen if you didn't follow instructions. Not that I expected the drill sergeants, you know, to put their hands on me at any time, but that's how I received instructions. You only got to tell me something one time. Some people don't do that. Like my children, I have three grown children, and they're all very different. You know, my oldest daughter. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this. You know, my oldest daughter, all I had to do was just, like, look at her, you know, and just start talking like this with disappointment in my voice. And, like, I could get across to her. Like, that, like, would turn her world upside down. My middle child, like, I still don't know how to reach her sometimes, you know. Yeah. Spankings didn't work. You know, raising my voice didn't work. She's just very, you know, strong-willed. You know, it's just what I had to learn with her is, like, she just has to learn life lessons the hard way, and you just got to let her fail. That's how she learns. You know, and my son, he's the baby. He's that is my heart, and all I have to do is just, like, same way with my oldest daughter, is just like, hey, you know, did you sign up for classes this semester? You know, that's how I have to talk to him. Like, if I raise my voice with him, he immediately shuts down. So I know I'm not going to be able to have a conversation with him. And I think soldiers are the same way. You got to learn them. Like, the Army's a people business. Aside from the mission and everything else, like, you have to learn people. You have to be an expert at knowing people, how they receive information, how they receive discipline. How they react to situations. And I think that's, you know, that's leadership. It's just knowing folks. And I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of got off on a tangent talking about my children.
No,
but
I think that you did. Yeah. Because you compared it to something that you've experienced.
Yeah,
and I
it's
think
just,
it comes across very, very well.
I didn't, you know, like, there are situations, you know, like, if you're a drill sergeant, like, you're in this environment, you know, to teach soldiers discipline. You don't have to, you know, say bad words or, you know, not treat them with dignity and respect, but you give orders, you're very clear, you're very concise, things aren't up for discussion, right? That's okay, because you're teaching them, and they need to learn the discipline, and they need to understand, you know, the Army writ large. And then when you go to your first duty assignment, you know, you can ask some questions, kind of understand things. But I think if you're in combat, you know, bullets are flying, someone makes a decision, not the time to question it, right? You need to go. We can't be worried about, you know, explaining the decision. you know, so we all don't die. Like that's the discipline that we have in our force, and it's just everyone understanding that there's a right time and a place to have a conversation, but there's also a right time and a place that you receive orders and you have to execute, and that's hard for some people. Mm-hmm. Because not everything's up for discussion at that particular moment in time.
I think that's one of the challenges with, you know, soldiers today. The you know, social media, the independence that everybody now has, the social climate, it's all changing the way soldiers think and the fact that they feel they can question everything. Probably at the most inopportune times, this is still the Army. So
it is the Army. You know, the bedrock of our profession is trust, but it's also discipline. You know, and being a truly disciplined force is knowing when the right time is to question something. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, I'm at a formation and I understand the tone that's in the first sergeant's voice. Probably not the right time to raise my hand and say I got a question, right? I'll address it later if it's not, you know, an emergency. You know, some of the vignettes I gave earlier, not the right time to have a discussion. It's knowing that, but, you know, soldiers got to understand that too. And soldiers got to understand that, you know, we are as powerful as we are because we're a disciplined force. You know, you just can't walk around at any given time and question every single thing because we just spend a lot of time going around in circles. You know, we spend a lot of time just answering questions and running around. I think it's good to challenge things. That's how change comes about. You know, the Sec Army talked about, and I think it was in General Dempsey's book, No Time for Spectators, you know, be respectfully rebellious. You know, knowing when the right time to challenge the norm and to ask why. That's an art. Mm-hmm. That's an art.
There's an article called How Do You Set Their Souls on Fire. It was, I think, in 1991 it came out on the NCO Journal about, and I think ultimately it comes down to if you're a good person, you treat people with dignity and respect, and you know you don't necessarily knife hand when you have to, you don't when you don't need to, you inspire rather than drive. I think ultimately that's how you set their souls on fire. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, I think that's great. I mean,
it goes with what you were saying.
I want every soldier just to be like passionate about what they do when they wake up in the morning. Like, and especially non-commissioned officers. Like, I was such a nerd, like being an NCO. Like, I was like, you know, you want to talk about indoctrinated? Like, I felt like I was 100% indoctrinated. Like, I would wake up in the morning and recite the NCO Creed. Like, I felt it with my every being. And that's what I want all NCOs to do. Like, understand the NCO Creed. Understand what it is that you do and the impact that you have. Like, you are in charge of individuals. More field craft. So we're working on solidifying that and getting the program of instruction complete and pushing that across the goal line. So that's first and foremost. The other thing that was kind of started under Sergeant Major Schmidt was mission command of other non-commissioned officer academies, a little bit more oversight in the delivery of Common Core, the NCO Common Core competencies. That the proponencies deliver. So we're working through that, you know, analysis to see what does that entail? You know, how can we help without being too much? Because we don't own the proponent non-commissioned officer academies, but we do own a portion of the instruction. So how can we ensure that it's being delivered by the right modality, the right way, and just being a resource for everyone out there? So those are like the two big things. I'll just kind of stop there. I'm not at the point where we're looking forward. You know, we have a new SMA and then I'm new. So we're trying to just kind of wait for everyone to get into place to kind of see the vision that the SMA has for the NCO Corps. And then we'll kind of, you know, start driving change from there.
What are some of the more surprising challenges you faced as Commandant?
Yeah, it's just the scope of the position. You know, it's, I tell people, you know, I call my old boss before, or we still, Major General Hale and I still keep in contact, you know, through text. And I said, you know, where's the CG when you need one? You don't, there's a, my opinion, I can't speak for all sergeants major, but as a command sergeant major, there's a certain level of comfort that you have knowing that you have a CG, and you just provide them some advice and they make the decision, right? Mm-hmm. You always want your advice to be the best possible advice, but that burden of the decision doesn't rest with you. It rests with me. So that's a change. So I'm, you know, internally, you know, there's some internal strife to myself of, you know, are we making the right decision? You know, what is the precedent that's being set by making this this decision? You know, I'm an intel professional by trade, so I'm red teaming, you know, my whole thought process to see all the things that could, you know, the second, third order effects of the decision I'm about to make. So that has been a surprise. I kind of knew of it, but you don't really understand the gravity of it until you're in the seat. And then it's a challenge. It's different. You know, your whole time you grow up, like you always have an officer counterpart, you know, that makes certain, I can't make all the decisions, of course, because I don't, you know, I don't have that kind of command authority, but the decision rests with me, you know, does this student get dismissed or disenrolled, you know, from the course? That's huge, because that affects their entire career. If a student gets dismissed from the Sergeant's Major Academy, they're essentially, you know, their career's done. Can't take that lightly. So that has been a challenge 1 month into the seat, and it's been a surprise. all wrapped up with a nice pretty bow.
Now, as the last question, Sergeant Major.
Okay. Yes.
This is one we ask everybody.
Okay.
Okay. What advice would you today give to your newly promoted Sergeant Everett self?
Yeah. I feel like it's the theme of my everything I've been talking about, and it's just, you know, take care, understand your people, take care of them, and train them. Part of taking care of your people is training them so that they are the best at what it is that they are supposed to be doing. And have fun. Like, if you wake up every day and you dread coming to work, you know, we want you to stay on the team, but this might not be the right career choice. Just have fun with it. Like, everyone's going to make a mistake. Learn from it. Laugh it off. It's not so serious that, you know, you can't overcome it. Everyone's going to make mistakes. I don't think there's certain things we have zero tolerance for, but overall, we're not a zero defect army. We are all going to make mistakes, and we all got to learn from them. I didn't have that concept growing up as a, you know, a young sergeant, but that's what I would tell myself.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. It was truly an honor to have you on the podcast.
No, I very much appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining.
Stay tuned for more interesting guests and inspiring conversations right here at the NCO Journal. Submit your articles, get published. Don't forget to visit our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time on the Sergeant's Time Podcast.